This is an ABC podcast.
Mark Trevorrow is back on Conversations today. Mark Trevorrow is best known as his alter ego, comedian, cabaret star, Bob Down. But Mark has another stage identity when he performs as Mark Trevorrow, singing songs that he's loved since he was a kid, created by people that he's come to know or to work with as a grown-up. And today you'll hear some of those classic songs and the stories of the people behind them. Welcome back, Mark.
Richard, it is always lovely to see you.
We're going to start with Anthony Newley. Anthony Newley is one of those people where if you go to someone, you could say, you know, have you heard of Anthony Newley? People go, yeah. Or they'll go, no.
There's an age cutoff, isn't there?
There is.
I think you need to be sort of 40 and over.
The thing is, everyone does know Anthony Newley because they've heard his songs in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He's the guy who co-wrote The Candyman.
You can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew.
And that beautiful song, Pure Imagination.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
That's Gene Wilder there singing Pure Imagination, a song co-written by Anthony Newley for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Mark, that's how I first encountered his music, through that movie. Was that where you first encountered him?
I think we probably first encountered him in maybe Dr. Dolittle. And also in the 70s, he used to host a thing called the Monte Carlo Show. And we must have seen, and it was this outrageously over-the-top, campy cabaret show filmed in an outdoor sort of a nightclub in Monaco, of course.
Wow.
Touchdown, Monaco. It's like an Alpine cigarette commercial. And he was just so outrageous with the... Anthony Newley had this very weird way of singing with a very exaggerated English accent. And it's a huge influence on David Bowie. Interesting.
And maybe on Bob Down as well, perhaps.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It went off like a neutron bomb in my head watching the first time I saw Anthony Newley, because he started as a young film star. He was a kid actor. He is in the David Lean's 1947 or 48 Oliver Twist. He plays the Artful Dodger.
Right. He's, so he was a child actor.
Child star.
Right.
Did a lot of movies. Then he became, in the late 50s, when he was sort of in his late teens, early 20s, he became a British pop star. He had a massive pop hit record with a sort of a swing version of Pop Goes the Weasel.
That doesn't sound great to me.
It's like sort of skiffle era. Do you know what I mean? Sort of pre-Beatles, yep. Al McCogan, that totally dag central British pop.
Is he swinging Pop Goes the Weasel?
Oh, swinging it. Then he sort of became a songwriter in partnership with a great songwriter who just died recently, Leslie Bricus. And together they wrote two smash hit West End and Broadway musicals in the early and mid-60s. The first one was called Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. And the second one was called The Roar of the Grease Paint, The Smell of the Crowd. Great title. And we all know the songs from Who Can I Turn To? Feeling Good.
Right, the song that Nina Simone covered.
He wrote Goldfinger, theme of Goldfinger. Then he became a Vegas cabaret star, like a major headline in Vegas in the late 60s and early 70s. And that's the era that I'm recreating with my current stage show.
So you say he also made appearances in other movies like Dr. Dolittle.
Yeah.
What was he like in Dr. Dolittle?
I think he was the assistant. I think he was Dr. Dolittle, Rex Harrison's assistant, long-suffering assistant.
Right. And how did he like working with Rex Harrison?
Well, this is the thing. I ended up working with Anthony Newley on I made a New Year's Eve special when I was living and working in London in 1996. And he was the guest because I'd seen him in his cabaret show, and he knocked me out, even though he was in his late 60s. And as it turned out, he wasn't well, but he was covering that up. And I just said, oh, I've got to have Anthony Newley on my special. And he was incredible. And he told me, I said, well, what was Rex Harrison like? And he said, he hated animals. Rex Harrison absolutely hated animals. And every time they did a take, there'd be a monkey or a gnu or a, you know, a gibbon. And he'd say, or a zebra. And as soon as they yelled cut, he'd say, get it off me. And I said, oh my God. I said, what were the animals like to work with you? He said, and Newley said, they were fantastic. They all bit Rex. He was an amazing. People warned me, oh, he's going to be a big diva, he's going to be trouble, but he wasn't. He was a total, utter pro.
I wonder how he survived being a child star, because normally you don't get out of that one and be alive, do
you? That's right. He survived spectacularly because he grew into an astoundingly charismatic and handsome ladies' man with a fantastically original approach to singing and, as it turned out, writing. And he married Joan Collins. They had three children together.
He married Joan Collins.
He married Joan Collins.
So, nonetheless.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. So, this amazing man who'd written all these classic songs that are with us today, the songs endure even if his name has sort of slipped from a lot of people's memory.
It's true.
When you made that TV special with him in 1996 for ITV in the UK, that was the one you were hosting and starring in.
That's
that was
right.
The Bob Down TV special.
The Bob Down special. It's on YouTube.
And you brought him on. How was he living at that point?
Well, this is the thing. I went to see him in his cabaret show in a beautiful little cabaret room in the West End, and then I was told that he was, at that time, was so down on his uppers that he was living with his 94-year-old mum in her Bethnal Green council house. Things had really died off for him, and what we also didn't know at the time was that he was not well. He had cancer, which had returned, but he didn't want anybody to know about it because he was going to star in the West End that Christmas, which is why he agreed to do the show to promote it. He was going to star in a West End musical adaptation of Christmas Carol that he had written with Leslie Bricus called Scrooge, in which he played the title role. So if it had got out that he wasn't well, he wouldn't have got his insurance to cover him in the lead role. And so, and then we went and saw him do the musical, in which he was phenomenal at the Dominion, that great barn of a theatre.
That's the biggest West End theatre.
Yeah, it's where We Will Rock You has been playing for 38 years.
When he appeared on your show, you can still find that clip somewhere hidden in the bowels of YouTube or Vimeo or something like that. You see him. He's not a young man.
No, he's not.
But there's something really lovely about seeing an older man light on his feet.
Who can take the sunrise, sprinkle it with dew?
And he does this skipping dance. Is that you choreographing that?
No, that's me copying him. No, that's me copying him. And he was one of those people, you know, when you get to work with people like that and they say, just do whatever you like. I'll do whatever you want. You just tell me what you want. And so he was so fun to tease and to camp it up with, because he's one of those dudes that doesn't mind being very camp, you know, one of those ladies men that is also very strangely camp. He was something else. And something happened when we were doing at the end, when we had to all wave over the final titles while they rolled over us.
You waved over the titles.
You know, you
like Young Talent
waving.
Time.
Yeah. Right. And you got to wave and wave, stand and stand and stand. And he hugged me. And it was a moment that I will treasure all my life, because he hugged me and he whispered in my ear, "You've really got it," he said to me. And, you know, there's just moments when people say something, someone, a particular person says something like that, and you just hang on to it for your whole life. It was an incredible moment.
So for all his charisma, his energy as a performer in that TV special you made with him in 1996, how unwell was he?
Oh, he was very unwell. In fact, it was his last ever TV appearance, and he got sick. Basically, good old Dr. Greasepaint, we call it. You know, when you're not feeling well, you get on stage and you don't feel sick while you're on stage, or if you injure yourself on stage, you don't feel the pain. They call it Dr. Greasepaint. I think that what got him through was, now I look back and I'm not 100% sure, but I know that he had to stay well enough to do that West End lead, because that was going to give him the money that he was going to be needing when he got really sick. So that was his last show. It was his last stage show, and that was his last TV appearance. He was dead within about 12 or 18 months. So that was just astounding to find that out later on.
And he was on the verge of a comeback.
Yeah. Oh, no. Scrooge was, it was a really good musical. A really good musical with great songs. Great songs. And he was just, you know, there are people you see on stage in musicals Like people like Deborah Byrne is like that. There are certain people that you see in stage musicals, Todd McKenney, they just glow. Hugh Jackman. You know, some people just have this aura of a star aura around them, and that's what he was like on stage. And then we went, and then we had visited him back in dressing room number one at the Dominion Theatre, and he had his dinner delivered every night from the Ivy restaurant. Silver service. And his lovely lady friend had put all his show posters all up framed around the room. And I remember being there just thinking, this is how I want to live. A liveried waiter delivered his dinner.
From the Ivy.
From the Ivy.
Every night.
Every night.
I'm going to play a track now of you performing one of his songs that I did not know was one of his songs.
Yeah.
It's called The Joker. This is you in your own live show as Mark Trevorrow performing the song. Now, people will instantly recognise this song, in Australia at least. Tell me a bit about the provenance of this song, please.
Well, what happened, Bond, when I was 20 and when I was 20 years old living in Melbourne, I met an 18-year-old Gina Riley at Wendy Harmer's 25th birthday party. That's how long ago it was. And we just fell in love with each other. And Gina was so excited because she finally met a boy who knew who Liza Minnelli and Judy Garland was. She was so excited for about 5 minutes. And but then we got over that bit and we just fell in love as friends and as collaborators, as you can imagine. And I gave her a live Shirley Bassey album that I adored called Live at the Talk of the Town, which was that fantastic big theatre nightclub in London in the West End.
My mum and dad went there in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it became a nightclub, and now it's a casino and cabaret room. Anyway, it was this sense, it was the number one cabaret room. It was a massive old converted theatre. And this album was Shirley Bassey Live at the Talk of the Town, and one of the songs on it was The Joker. I gave that to Gina when we were that, and then years later when they were putting Kath and Kim together, she rang me and she said, "What was that song? What was that song? What was that album? What was that album you gave me that had The Joker on?" I said, "Shirley Bassey Live," and that's the arrangement that Gina sings on and uses as the theme song of Kath and Kim.
It's so distinctive. Like most of his songs, it's hard to sort of say what they have in common, except that they all have drama in them.
Yeah, they do.
That's it. They all have a sense of drama going from.
Yes.
Even the sweet suspense of Pure Imagination, which just has that glockenspiel or something at the start of it, and then the high shimmering strings.
I think because he and Brickers were writing for the stage, they had to put it made them very intense, intensely dramatic, lyrically and musically. And so whether they're ballads or, you know, if you think of Who Can I Turn To, if you don't know Newley's work, you really need to just type Anthony Newley, N-E-W-L-E-Y, into YouTube. He made very few TV appearances, but there's a couple of appearances that he did on the Ed Sullivan Show, and you really see he does Who Can I Turn To on the Ed Sullivan Show in his character. These characters that he did in his shows were sort of like, you know, the everyman, the sort of the clown, the little man.
Wasn't he a working class boy
very
from
much.
Hackney?
From he
Hackney.
Was.
Yes.
Yeah, he was.
This is Mark Trevorrow performing The Joker by Anthony Newley.
There's always a joker in the pack, always a lonely clown. The poor laugh and fool falls on his back, everyone laughs when he's down. There's always a funny man in the game, but he's only funny by mistake. Everyone laughs at him just the same, they don't see his lonely heart break. They don't care as long as there is just a fool, as foolish as he can be. There's always a joker, that's the rule. Fate deals a hand and I see the joker is me. Thank you.
There's always a bunny man in the game, but he's only bunny by mistake. Everyone loves at him just the same. They don't see his lonely heartbreak. No, they don't care as long as there is a just a fool, foolish as he can be. There's always a joker, that's the rule. Fake deals ahead and I see the joker is me.
That's Mark Trevorrow performing The Joker by Anthony Newley. The next encounter we're going to talk about now that you've had with a kind of a great showbiz legend is with the great Cilla Black, Mark Trevorrow. How did you meet Cilla Black for the first time?
Well, firstly, I was obsessed with Cilla Black and her records. I knew all about her connection with the Beatles because she'd been the hat check girl at the Cavern Club in Liverpool.
Get out.
And she was one of the only local girl singers in Liverpool and used to jump up at every opportunity to sing. And my cabaret group, the Globos, which I created with my beautiful friend, the late Wendy Duwal, we used to lip sync old records. And our favourite one for Wendy to lip sync was always anything by Cilla Black.
What were her big hits in the 60s?
Well, she had her first hit was written for her by the Beatles. And then her first number one hit was Anyone Who Had a Heart by Burt Bacharach.
Didn't she also do You're My World?
And yes, she did.
And if I'm to be perfectly honest, my first encounter with that song was seeing Darryl Braithwaite perform it, I think.
And he did a really good cover of it was also number one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And she also sang Alfie, which I sing as myself, which I absolutely love. She started as a pop star, but then she ended up as the sort of the number one TV presenter all through the late 60s, right up to the late 80s, early 90s. So there I was finally getting to meet her and work on her Tea Time variety shows. And she was so fantastic because she really loved my kind of comedy, my kind of madcap, old school, campy comedy that I do as Bob Down. And she told me that she'd worked with Tommy Cooper. She did a 6-week run or 8-week run at the Palladium with Tommy Cooper. He was closing the bill. She was second last on the bill. But in between booking this show and the show happening, she had the number one single. So she moved into the top spot. And Tommy Cooper was second, second last.
Oh, no.
But she used to watch him. She said she used to watch him every show from the wings waiting to go on, and she learnt everything she needed to know about comedy from watching Tommy Cooper every night. And on opening night, he massively overran, and his wife was in the wings next to Cilla saying, "I'll kill him, you poor girl. I'll kill him when he gets off." And so he finished to a thunderous standing ovation, and he walked into the wings and his big, great big wife was bashing him with her handbag. "How dare you, this poor girl." And so Cilla walked onto her opening number with that happening behind her. Anyway, fantastic.
Podcast. Broadcast. This is Conversations with Richard Feidler. Hear more conversations anytime on the ABC Listen app. Or go to abc.net.au/conversations.
So there you are, you're in London, Mark performing as Bob Down, going on Cilla Black's TV show, the most beloved person in British broadcasting at that time. Did you tell her of your long fascination with her?
So I told her that we used to lip sync her records, and I said we used to do Surround Yourself with Sorrow. And she went, "Oh, number 7, 1969. She knew all her chart positions. She knew all of her chart positions. Years later, she became really good pals with Lily Savage, Paul O'Grady. And
Lily Savage is a kind of a legendary scouse, foul-mouthed drag queen that ended up has ended up becoming a huge TV personality in the UK.
Yeah, and he did her eulogy at Liverpool Cathedral when she died. And he turned 60 in 2015, and me and my hub Steph went to London for Sav's 60th birthday party. And Cilla was there, which was remarkable because at this point she really was not going out much. She had a very sad last few years once she stopped working. And she'd lost her husband, Bobby, who had been her manager and boy, you know, they'd been together since they were teenagers. And she was very, and so people knew to leave her alone. So she was at this party fairly with one of her sons who was managing her at that time. And it turned out this was 6 weeks before she died. And she was very blue and sort of glum. But Steph didn't know. Steph didn't know that she was massively famous. Everybody was leaving her alone except Steph, who started chatting her up.
And, he just saw this sad-looking woman in the corner and thought, I'll cheer her up.
Yeah.
Without knowing who she was at all.
Well, I told her, but, you know, he sort of didn't. He's young enough not to really know who, if you're Australian, you don't, and you're under, you know.
So it's like saying, you know, there's George Formby over there or something. It doesn't mean anything to them, right?
And I didn't even say go. But he's just so sweet and lovely, and you know, he's great. Like, he can look after himself. But this is what we all want, a partner who can look after themselves at parties.
That's right.
And so he got her chatting, and in the end he was dancing with her. And she said to him, I've got three sons and two grandsons, and they're all a massive disappointment to me. And he went, oh, why? She said, because none of them are gay, she said. Because she was so close to Brian Epstein. He was her manager. Yeah. And she was close to Tommy Nutter. She was close to all of these amazing gay showbiz people.
There is a special love that the British have for long-time stars like Cilla Black. That's not – that I don't think they – I don't think any other nation reveres its long-running stars like that.
There's very few in Australia, aren't there? Like Bert is definitely one.
Was one.
Although, you know, you have a long period. Bert had a long period out of the limelight before he sort of, you know, came back. Oh, I say, you just have to live long enough and you're going to be a legend.
Yeah.
We've got to hang in there, Richard. But yes, the Brits have this, and I have a theory because it's such a small country with a massive population. It's a tiny island country nation with, nations with 60 million people. And the media has always been national. So all the papers are national. All the BBC channels, radio stations and channels are national. So you get this blanket effect of the weather's so crap. Everybody is at home watching television.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's right. I think it's these stars that often people feel very grateful to them because they rescue them from the depressing wet bank holiday weekend in England.
And the same with theatre. It is a massive theatre country. Yeah. People go to shows and concerts, again, to feel warm.
It's not like us in Australia. We just go out.
Yeah.
You can go outside.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, if it's constant, it's been raining for a month outside and it's cold and damp and horrible and there's damp in the flat, you turn on the telly and there's Morecambe and Wise or there's Cilla Black or someone like that.
Yeah.
They cheer you up.
Yeah, yeah. So they just have this wonderful loyalty to the stars that they love. It's quite remarkable. And I lived and worked there long enough for that to happen a little tiny bit with me. I'm on my Facebook pages and I still have so many people in Britain. When are you coming back to the UK? And now they're angry. Now they're angry with me because I've left it more than 5 years. They're turning on me now.
So the song we're going to play of you, of hers, or that she made famous, that you sing as part of your live act, is Alfie. That's from the Michael Caine movie, is it?
It certainly is. And she told me that Bacharach made it quite clear that he didn't want her to do the vocal. And they insisted on it because it was a British film. He wanted the Dionne Warwick version of it. And so he came to London to direct the session and she had to sing it with a full orchestra because you did in those days. And he made her do it 39 times. And in the end, he used take 3. She said it was one of the most traumatic work experiences she'd ever had. And I mean, my God, that her record of that is stunning, and I love seeing. And we've named our schnauzer after this song.
What's it all about? How free? Is it just for the moment we live? What's it all about when you sort it out, Alfie? Are we meant to take more than we give? Or are we meant to be kind? And if only fools are kind, Alfie, then I guess it is wise to be cruel.
Mark Trevorrow singing Alfie, the theme song from the movie of the same name that appeared in the 1960s, made Michael Caine a star and was originally sung in the movie by Cilla Black from a Burt Bacharach song. Finally, Mark, the last of our singer-songwriters who may or may not have been forgotten is Paul Williams. Tell me a bit about him.
The diminutive Paul Williams, an amazing songwriter and composer, singer, from in late 60s, early 70s, wrote all of most of the early Carpenters hits. We've only just begun Rainy Days and Mondays. He wrote and starred in a musical film called Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, that was a cult classic. Like it often, cinemas would often show that as a cult feature alongside the Rocky Horror Show in the 70s.
That's how I saw it.
The Phantom of the Paradise. I remember seeing that
great
when I was a
songs.
Kid. Yeah,
great songs.
And he's a really tiny guy.
Tiny little guy.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of people think he's one of these people. You know how it happened to Holly Johnson from Frankie Goes to Hollywood? People get an idea that someone's dead and they're not. I hope that never happens to us, Richard. Because
that's why, poor, what do you think I go on the radio most days, Mark?
Poor little Paul Williams. In fact, there's a wonderful documentary about him called Still Alive, which is all about everybody thinking that he's dead, and he's still working and performing, and wrote this unbelievably beautiful ballad.
Well, I have to say, in regards to that, this very week I was watching that amazing movie called Baby Driver, which is. It's a fantastic action film, an amazing film. And suddenly there's Paul Williams in it as an arms dealer, as a tiny sort of criminal arms dealer. Yeah. And I did say to my wife, Paul Williams, I thought he was dead.
Hello. Hello.
This is a Paul Williams song performed by him that was later covered by the Carpenters, Rainy Days and Mondays.
Mia down.
This is a song you often sing at the end of your set when you're performing as Mark Trevorrow, and we're putting all that stuff aside, the glam and show business qualities of Bob Down to one side, and you're performing as Mark Trevorrow. This is a song that everyone knows straight away. Well, most people know straight away, by Paul Williams, called Rainbow Connection, that featured in the very first Muppets movie, sung by Kermit the Frog.
In a swamp.
It's the most beautiful song.
First time a puppet's ever played a banjo.
Indeed, with expert finger work there too, from felt fingertips and the like.
I also remember how he was the first puppet to ride a bicycle.
I do. That's right. He's singing Moving Right Along with Fozzie Bear at the start of the movie. Yes. We keep these details on our head for no apparent reason.
I heard this version of Rainbow Connection, that's the song, and I heard it by Peter Cinciotti, who's a New York cabaret singer and piano player, and he did it really gentle and soft, and I thought, oh, that's nice. And this was my late dad's favourite song that I ever sung. I sang this at my dad's funeral.
Oh, do you have to talk yourself into that each night when you do that without wanting to cry?
It can actually catch my throat. Yeah. It actually is very hard to get through it because it's such a beautiful song anyway. And then to sing it soft and gentle, it is. It's actually quite hard to get through it.
It's
the internal mechanics of it because there is like the way Newley knew how to do it. Paul, you know, if you think about those Carpenters songs, it's technical. It's like... there are obviously chord progressions and keys that are triggers for emotion. Yeah. And great songwriters know, whether they know technically, exactly, or whether they just have an instinct for it, they know how to do it.
It's like Burt Bacharach. His arrangements are as complex as jazz, but you'd never know it because they sound so easy to sing. Mm. They, you know, you can have like that scene, you know, in The Deer Hunter with someone singing You're Just Too Good to Be True. And yet the music behind it's really sophisticated.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Paul Williams' songs as well.
Yeah.
My theory about when you sing this, it has this lovely effect on the audience. And I think...
it's one of those songs that they sigh. You get the audience sighs when they hear the first line. They love it so much. I do in the Bob Show at the moment with Shauna Jensen, I sing You Don't Bring Me Flowers. We do it stupidly, but the same thing. They hear the first line and they sigh. There is just some – that's obviously the great trick with writing great ballads.
I think there are some old, you know, songs from kids' movies that have that effect on people. It makes them sort of giddy when they hear it, like Let's Go Fly a Kite from Mary Poppins, just like that too. People swag from side to side.
Chim Chim Cheree. Yes. All the songs from Mary Poppins are like that for me.
And this one's like it. You can see people smile and their heads bob from side to side.
Mm.
There's real art in that. My theory about Rainbow Connection, one of the reasons why is the melody is like an arpeggio.
That's true.
Like that. What do you hear in the complexity of that song, Mark?
I think it's there's not only the verses are beautiful, but it has the most amazing bridge, the most amazing middle eight. You know, the bit where a song, there's a variation.
The bit where he goes, all of us under its spell, we know that it's probably magic. And then there's a key change.
And we know that it's probably magic. And that's the key change. It's just so it's like great comedy writing, like, you know, the way the girls write Kath and Kim. I remember when I was doing Kath and Kim, Gina said, don't ad lib around, just perform the script exactly as written. And it's the same with a song like Rainbow Connection. You just have to sing it correctly, exactly as written. And it has such power that you can almost phone it in.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? What's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, only illusions. Rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers and me. Thank you. what's so amazing that keeps us stargazing? And what do we think we might see? Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers and me, all of us under its spell. We know that it's probably magic. Have you been half asleep? Have you heard voices? I've heard them calling my name. Are these the sweet sounds that called the young sailors? I think they're one and the same. I've heard it too many times to ignore it. It's something that I'm supposed to be. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. The lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Mark, it's been such a pleasure having you back on Conversations.
Oh, it's lovely to be here, Rich.
It's lovely to talk about songs. It's nice to talk about music. Mark, thank you so much once again.
Delightful.
abc.net.au/conversations is our website. I'm Richard Feidler. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast of Conversations with Richard Feidler. For more Conversations interviews, please go to the website abc.net.au/conversations.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.